We Have Issues is a weekly podcast full of reviews of comics and oversharing. We use grown-up language to make very childish jokes. You can find the show at wehaveissues.net, as well as anywhere else where average to not too bad podcasts can be found. Sex in.
You're the one who's talking about it, Nick.
You
can be 16 to have sex, but you have to be 18 to star in porn,
that.
Buy porn, go into a sex shop.
He really heavily edited that.
We need to episode.
One day we can release the bloopers.
No, this needs to be discussed because I think what Jesse is getting at. We're recording now, by the way.
Oh, brilliant!
Hello,
do we have to talk about it?
But I want this to be on the record because I don't want this to be out there. What Jesse is heavily suggesting is that I edited the conversation she and I had to make it sound like I think that I talked more about.
No, I think you edited to be a lot more safe than what we were talking about.
I thought maybe I'll cut those out just because. I mean, Jesse, I trust Jesse to know her own mind, even though she is very young and a girl. I do trust her to have it.
All these women.
But at the same time...
The estrogen in here. Oh, my gosh.
At the same time, it's making me feel a bit lightheaded and like I'm going to say something drastically wrong, which has never stopped me before. Yes, I think that there was a little bit of you talking about squirting, but I can't...
Oh, we're back. That was the worst possible time for me to take a sip of drink.
We're back to that.
No, talking about edit. Just for anyone who thinks that the way this normally goes out, it must not be edited at all.
How did that come up?
That's an interesting choice of words.
I think we were talking about weird common themes in porn now.
Yeah, and where they come from.
Yeah. We discussed that.
I'm kind of alarmed by the implication that you're censoring a woman's views on sex. I think that's the patriarchy at work again.
I think it is. I think it's disgusting. A lot of it I cut for time, because once we got onto the subject of squirting, she didn't stop. She talked about it.
Once you pop, you don't stop.
That brings up an interesting question. Would it be the same if it was a 17-year-old boy talking about it?
A 17-year-old boy would get more mockery.
But I think it's because Nick's quite a lot older than me.
Am I? That's never come up
before. That's the first one today.
Yeah.
And I am 17. And I think maybe it did seem a bit weird that we had a conversation about that kind of thing.
But the thing is, the thing about it is, I am interested to... Because, okay, so because I'm very old, indeed... Okay.
Like Father Time.
And I'm getting there with the beard as well. When I was growing up, I was a boy growing up. This is on record on podcast before, but I don't think it's been on We Have Issues. I wasn't very tall. So for me, growing up, pornography was the underwear section in my parents' Grattan catalogue. Like sometimes on the lingerie pages, you could see through the underwear a little bit, and then sometimes on the shower pages and solariums were a big thing, you know, sunbeds that people had at home were a big thing in the 80s, and sometimes the ladies were in bikinis, but very, very occasionally they were a bit naked and you could see a bit of side boob. That was pretty much my experience of... I know
very
there was
censored.
Porn around, but there wasn't any video.
That sounds heartbreaking.
Yeah, I mean, apparently there was video. I found some in a drawer and... in my parents' bureau thing. Bureaus were a big thing back then as well. We didn't even have video when I was very young, so it's kind of... VHS wasn't a thing yet, so it's at least at home. So for me, as much as I love that that porn is now this thing that everyone can... I mean, there are downsides to it, obviously, but like... It's fascinating to me talking to someone who's actually grown up just get at anything all the time. There is a gender thing there, because especially if it's a girl, because I know what blokes are like. We're basically, if we didn't have porn, we don't have much of a sexual identity. Most of the straight men, probably some of the gay, most of the gay men around, if we didn't have access to porn, we'd just be rubbing up and down against things. And we don't, anything turns us on, really.
Right. Okay.
So.
But so that's sort of what my point is. Yeah. Is that it might have seemed a lot worse than it actually was.
Yes.
Why don't we get a 17-year-old boy and talk about it?
So, yeah. And I mean, we didn't. Jesse, you're not just here because you're 17. I don't want people to think that Jesse's only here because she's a teenager. That's just a side
thing. I have
thing
interesting
that happened.
Views, I swear.
Yeah. And she was available.
That didn't make me sound like a hooker
at
all.
I didn't go there.
To be
at
fair,
all.
You're not the one who's called at the very last minute. You live next door,
so you're like a cheap hooker then.
I'm pretty much like the equivalent to leaning out the window at a passing woman and going, "Oi, love, you want to come up?"
See, I'm
the one
booked.
Who goes, "Yeah, all right."
I'm like a high class cool girl. Else.
Yeah,
for governors and athletes.
So Laura's like the. Female podcasting equivalent of the prostitute equivalent of a pot noodle.
Yes.
You happen
we got
to see
that,
it on the shelf and you think, oh,
and you're
I
like,
have
I
that
can't
now.
Be fucked to cook. Yeah. I'll just grab it. It'll be 2 minutes tops.
Whereas, Jesse, you're super noodles.
You require a bit more effort.
Yeah.
The night before, yeah.
And
No. Jesse's those kind of nice egg noodles that are actually pretty easy to make, but people look at it and they're like, "Oh, you've spent a lot of time on that. That's a nice dish."
Oh, the ones that are actually already floppy, you just have to stick them in boiling water.
The ones that are like by the veg section in Asda.
I'm glad we clarified this.
I like this metaphor. Yeah, we'll go with that.
I'm the podcasting equivalent of a client.
Oh, okay.
I get to either be a client or a pimp, and I don't want to be a pimp because that's just exploitative. I don't want to be a client either. Eh?
Yeah. A John
or a pimp.
No, a John or a client.
But John.
No, John's a client.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
I don't think John is a client. I think he's.
John is a client.
Is he?
Yeah.
But.
Well,
is...
John.
No,
not
we're not
John.
Talking about John. The
podcaster John.
Yeah, we're talking about
John's.
John's are called. Yeah, they're like another word for client.
All right. Yeah, no, I think, not John, our John, podcasting
no,
John.
No.
We were, disclaimer, we were no way implying that John enjoys sex with prostitutes.
Yes, that was not a thing.
He doesn't enjoy it.
He just feels compelled to it. So anyway, this is We Have Issues. I'm Nick. The voices you can hear across the table from me are Jesse.
Hello.
And Laura.
Hello.
I think that's the preamble. I think we can talk about comics.
I thought this is only my second podcast I'm doing with you guys, but I thought this was like a warm-up exercise, like in drama class or something, like before
I
the
I think
rehearsals.
It has become that now.
Yeah. It's pretty much.
It's like you've got to just talk to get into the flow of conversation, and then halfway through the conversation you presumably flip your magic switch and then go, "We're recording now." And
oh no, I leave it. I start recording at a point when people don't know, and then I pick when we've warmed up enough. But I kind of like how it feels when you drop into a conversation that's already in full flow and someone's just mentioned squirting or facials or whether or not one of our fellow podcasters uses prostitutes.
We should stop using those words.
Which
ones? We're going to get in trouble.
I'm sure we'll be fine.
How many times have you mentioned it now?
I feel it is sexist and it is patriarchal. It's more paternalistic than patriarchal.
Yeah.
Although I feel paternalism is
we're gonna
pretty
get
much
shit on
a thing
again,
of the
we?
Patriarchy. It's a sort of that
it's
attitude.
Like the friendly, well-meaning face of it.
Yeah.
And so I'm listening back to it and I feel way more comfortable hearing myself saying awful things.
Well, I'm also like not just barely 17. I turn 18 in like 3 months.
Yep.
So,
and the nation
so you're
is counting down.
And three
yes.
quarters.
Oh, yeah.
It's
are
like
we having a sun style countdown where it's like, oh, she's nearly 18.
That is so fucking creepy, by the way. That was
I'm nearly
so
not a paedophile.
Yeah, like.
It's hilarious. Oh, which are we talking about a more recent one or are we talking about the Charlotte Church one?
I'm talking about the Emma Watson one.
I was thinking of the Emma Watson one, but
they literally did a countdown to her birthday when she was going to be 18.
They also did, there was. I read in one of the teen magazines I read, obviously, when I was a teen, not recently, it was this girl who got, like, model scouted on the street, as occasionally people do. the woman was an agent, she was a legitimate agent, and said, you'd be great at topless work. She was a couple of months shy of her 16th birthday.
Yeah.
So they signed her, and then for 2 weeks had her doing shoots where she was removing gradually less clothes until her 16th birthday. That. When she was topless, because...
That is creepy. I was going to defend it, because I usually defend scouting and young models, because...
That's the thing, it's that like... Is but what, there's a difference between sort of, hey, you'd look great as a catalogue model, or even a catwalk model.
Yeah.
But then there's like, hey, check out the rack on that 15-year-old.
We are already planning several weeks after Jesse turns 18, of us repeatedly referring to how... Hasn't she grown nicely and all of that stuff?
Oh, that's nice.
She's all grown up. She's filled out.
See, God. I'm don't say that.
Little Nancy Callahan. She grew up. She filled out.
See, I'm just waiting till I can go out with like the comic book club and drink, because now it's just apple juice.
Not drink? No. Oh yes.
It's apple juice. Now you have to just take a hip flask with you.
Yeah.
Everywhere.
Yeah. No.
What you were doing juice. Anyway? You were leaning into that anyway.
But. I am borderline alcoholic. Like, you push me into 18 and I'm just there.
What's your drink of choice?
Vodka.
Yeah,
please.
See, it's all right if you say it. it would have been desperately culturally inappropriate if I'd said it. But so, I was reading my comics that... We'll talk about our comics in a minute.
Mm-hmm.
Did I say my comics? I meant our comics.
I think you said our comics.
Oh, okay, look at him, anyway. Patriarchy.
Yeah, it's terrible.
Yeah.
I was reading my comics in the kitchen at work, and my boss's boss came in, and we were talking about comics a little bit, because people are interested when you're reading. It's different from how it used to be. It used to be that people would just jeer at you, but normally in the workplace now people show a bit of an interest. Sometimes they handle your comics, which I don't like, and it can get quite awkward, but so, because they're not very careful. Anyway, so we were talking a little bit about that, and then we were talking a little bit about podcasting and doing stuff, like fun stuff outside of, because he's got a second job and stuff like that. So we were talking about that. And then he started talking about how maybe I should pursue a career in something like publishing or something like that, which, superficially, I think was probably just him being like supportive and showing an interest in my future. But that's my boss, the guy who's in charge of our whole department, and he spent a 10-minute chunk of lunchtime telling me maybe I should look for another job. I don't really know. I mean, we don't have to dwell on it. I'm sure it was nothing.
Are we all right to be here then?
I'm sure it's fine. Before we start properly, there's going to be a contribution from George Beedham later on. He's still trying to convince me that cosmic comics are good. I've got a long-standing problem with cosmic. Yeah, people say that. And that's why he's trying to convince me.
He's going to do a good job.
What do you mean by cosmic comics?
Things like, I don't like... I've been enjoying Guardians of the Galaxy, before that, I don't really like any of the Marvel comics when they go out into space.
Like Silver Surfer.
Dan Slott's Silver Surfer is amazing.
Yeah, he really likes Dan Slott's Silver Surfer.
Because if you watch him on Twitter, he basically wanted to do a Doctor Who comic.
Yeah.
You can tell that when you read it, but it's better than, it's just, oh, I love it. But usually what happens is whenever one of the normal Marvel titles goes out into space, it stops being about human character. It stops being about the interesting side of the human stuff, and it starts being the space opera stuff. And that isn't what appeals to me that much. The thing is that George started doing this before I'd read all of the most recent run of Nova, and before I'd really properly got into Guardians of the Galaxy. So it's still really good. There's still really good contributions, listener, and you will enjoy it. But I kind of already convinced myself that some of the spacey stuff's okay. Nova's really good.
Ooh, that's interesting, because we were at Comic Book Club and we had a 10-minute lovely conversation. Well, not conversation, it was very one-sided. It was a rant about how terrible Nova is.
There were two factions.
It really wasn't.
There were the people who are like, Nova is terrible, and the people who are like, I've not read it.
Yeah, that was pretty much it. But people were like... like, actively, not just like, oh, I didn't like it, like, actively hate Nova and everything about that run.
To be fair, though, one of those people was Glenn.
Yeah.
Hi, Glenn.
Glenn was just like,
he's famous for loudly hating things.
Does he like, oh, we don't need to get into it. Oh, we probably don't need to. Yeah, I really enjoyed it. I read the run, okay. And it's like a really nice, I mean, there's a real, and it's something that I know George will touch on in the contribution, but that there is a real effort with the new Nova to kind of create a Peter Parker style vibe. So he's
Which is weird because they have Miss Marvel for
that. Yeah, I was about to go to the same point.
But I don't think Marvel are going on the intention of only doing this with one of these things. They know that if you want to get teenagers writing, reading, it's cash, but also at the same time, if you want to get teenagers reading, the reason Peter Parker worked is because it was a thing for teenage boys, but at the time, like, it was a thing for teenage boys to identify with. And so they're doing it with Ms. Marvel, but they're also doing it with Nova. He's like this, he's trying to juggle high school with this spacey stuff, and it really works. It's really sort of, it's quite fun, and it's anyway, we don't need to anyway.
It's an interesting take, though.
Yeah, okay. I like it. Okay. I really like it. But there's room for, I mean, if Marvel want to do loads of those books just to try and get good books for teenagers to read, I am down with that. Mm-hmm. I'm very happy with that.
#, more Young Avengers.
Yes.
Just put it out there.
You're both going to LSEC, aren't you?
Yes.
Hopefully.
I have a ticket that you can have.
I wonder who you're both...
I got my press pass, so...
I wonder who who's going to be there, Jesse, or any people that
just some people you probably have never heard of because I've never mentioned them. Just like Kieran Gillen, Jay McKelvey, just some people.
God,
Christian Ward, just
it's some. It's so cute.
Shut up.
You're such a fangirl.
What kind of like, because I was like, I applied for press passes for Geek Pride, and then I was like, oh, okay, kind of stressing out about whether or not I'd get them. And then they sent them, and now I'm like, oh, shit. Now I'm going to have to, like, try and interview people. I'm not going to be able to do it. I'm going to have to, like, do a couple of shots of whiskey before I can actually talk to Kieran Gillen. And then when I do, he'll be like, who's this freak with whiskey-smelling breath? Because
he'll be... He might worry about the alcoholism, but...
It's not alcoholism, it's just to calm my nerves.
But he'll yeah, I mean, like, I understand that you only need to do it whenever you talk to any person or go out of the house. Or,
I wouldn't talk, I'd just bow down, pay my respects.
But that's the thing, like, I have to, like provide some, like, I have to essentially show my workings out of it. So.
Laura, let's not lie to ourselves, that's not going to happen.
No, just, I know.
No.
Honestly,
they might just like swoon on his table.
I know you're really blasé about this, okay?
But no, not at all.
Yes, you are. You always comment on the fact that I treat these people like they're gods, and they are.
No, but it's really cute. I like it.
Thanks.
No, that's not being condescending. It's really cute because I kind of have met. I mean, I don't know them. They're not friends or anything, but like I know them to talk to, and I know people who know them. So it's kind of shut up. I just want to say, not you. This is me. I'm telling me to shut up. But I'm not blasé about it because I've been meaning to do audio interviews with people for the last 5 years of going to conventions, and I never like
do it. We should do it. If I can do it, you can do it, and vice versa. Together we can be better.
Definitely cannot do it. I kind of screamed when Christian Ward asked me on Twitter, "Are we going to be talking about the new issue of Odyssey?" And I was like, I literally screamed in college.
Hi, Christian Ward.
Yeah. They sort of, the people around my table were like, "Are you okay?" And I'm like, "No, you don't understand." And I had to like explain everything to them, and they still didn't understand.
See, that's cute. The reason it's cute is because it's excitement with you. Laura, I'm not sure. I think it's excitement and social anxiety. And in my case, it's just social anxiety.
It's only because it's not ground I've ever covered before. I've done a couple of interviews with people, but they've been over email. And they've been fairly new, like up and coming kind of creators. Sam Gardner and Brian Anderson. So yeah, like
I think I've seen their stuff on Facebook.
Yeah, it's like they're good, but they're still fairly new. So there wasn't that kind of, these are people that I've heard of who didn't just send me their work saying, please review it. These are like people that I buy. It's weirdly, it changes the dynamic a bit. So I'm like, oh God, I'm going to like go up and just go, I got to go.
So in Jesse's case, it's excitement. In your case, it's you want to do a good job because it's like there's a professional pride
I
or
guess so,
element
yeah.
of it.
I want to do a good job too. I want to provide like an insightful like view into their comic,
yeah.
which is why I feel really at home with Odyssey because I feel like I've gotten into it, even though with this issue is very different.
And that's the thing as well where I want to write. I don't like the idea of meeting a writer that I respect, and it's weird. I like want to be seen as an equal, as opposed to sort of a.
Oh God, that's
I
know.
I know
what you mean.
Like,
I know exactly what you mean.
Oh.
I don't know how to behave, and so I either don't do anything. The first year I went to Thought Bubble, and Thought Bubble is one of the most friendly conventions. It really is.
I'm totally going this year.
I walked in. And was in there. I did a round once, and about 10 minutes later, I had to go and get some fresh air because I just freaked out. I'd been going to conventions for years, but it was the first one I'd been to, so I kind of freaked out. But at the same time, when I do talk to them, when I do talk to creators I like, because I want to do the thing that it's not that I want to be seen as an equal, but I don't want to just. There's nothing wrong with people going up and just saying hello. I really like your stuff, but I kind of. Feel like, well, that isn't a fair representation of art. I want to show that I've thought about it and care.
Yeah, like, I get it.
Yeah, I'm not just like, I'm not a fan. I'm a fan, but I'm more than a fan.
And I appreciate it.
I quite often, I think, end up coming off as a bit blasé instead. Mm. And like saying, oh, yeah, I really like you. At one point, I said to one creator, it's Glenn Fabry. It was a really long time ago, and he'd been drinking, and I'd been drinking. It was about 11 o'clock in the morning, and so I queued up, and he was doing sketches, and I said. I wanted to say something supportive, but I also wanted to say something that said that I thought about it, and I think I said, and I must have sounded quite pithy and not that bothered. I said, I mean. I really like the sketch style you're doing there. You know, I could read a comic that's just in that pen and ink, because he was doing the fully rendered Preacher covers at that point.
Mm.
And he said, he kind of was gracious, but clearly didn't really respond to it as a compliment. And then a friend of mine was over there later on and said he was still muttering under his breath about like, see if Simon Bisley can do it this quickly, or I think he thought I was saying that he's not quick enough in his professional stuff. But what I was saying was I really liked his sketchy style because I really like his.
I got it
style.
When you first said it, but now that I think about it, I see how it.
Yeah,
you know,
I kind of got
way.
It. So, like, I'm not sure if it's like. You were just kind of overanalyzing. Like,
I should have just said, I really like your stuff.
Yeah,
that's what I should have said.
But then again, safe though,
isn't
it?
You kind of want to say something different because you don't want to be just another person. Because they must get like, I'm really big fan. I love your stuff. You know, and then they sign it, and then the next person, I'm super fan. Love your stuff. Sign something. Next person, such a big fan. Love your stuff. And it's like. That just like blends together into one.
There's that, and at the other, yes, and at the other end of which I think is nice, and they probably quite like actually. But then at the other end, there's the kids, and not always kids, coming up to them and saying, "Have you ever drawn Batman? Can you draw me a Batman?" For the art. And it's like, and I think artists now are much more used to that. But certainly when I started going to British conventions a long time ago, it was guys who'd worked on 2000 AD and stuff like that, and it was like, well, I think I can. Probably. I think most
just
of them probably have
George,
a Batman
Judge
and a Wolverine
like
and stuff
ears.
Now.
Mm.
But
the cape.
So, yeah. So, anyway, that's...
That's an interesting conversation.
So, you guys are going to be going...
It's almost as if this is a podcast.
Yeah. You're going to have a much less insecure London Super Comic Con than I usually do, I think.
I'll be crying.
I will be crying.
I'll see one of the artists and I'll just, like, break down and I'll need to leave for, like, 10 minutes.
You're cosplaying as well, so I'll want to interview you.
Fuck.
Because I want to interview cosplayers as well, because that's slightly less daunting, because...
Because they're not very important.
No. It's this weird thing of, like, cosplayers, and I say this as one, like, generally love it when you come up and go, can I have a photo?
Yeah.
Someone just says, oh, can I just film you? Can you answer just a couple of light little questions, like, you know, what do you like about cosplaying? You know, little things like that. It's like you kind of really like it. It's like, I'm being filmed. Oh, this is exciting. And then I kind
this
of feel like...
a permanent record of my face.
I kind of feel like creators, it's sort of like, could I possibly, if you're not too busy, you know
you
what,
feel like
actually,
you're jostling for their time.
I'm just going to... I'll just see myself out, sorry. Yeah. Big fan, love your work. This is sort of relevant and it is a kind of funny story. Have I told either of you my story about Marcosia?
No.
We went to London Film and Comic Con and Marcosia was... by all accounts, do we know Ash?
I know Ash.
Founder of Comic Book Club, yep. Amongst many other things, but that's how I met him.
He's so. Many other things, but he's the founder of...
Yeah. Okay. But yeah, so he said that... because he was going around with his portfolio looking for work, and we were outside, and he was like, oh, Marcosia might be looking for writers, you should go up and ask. So I was like, okay, I'll do this. So I was like, okay, let's do this. Went up to the booth and the guy was like, hi, are you right? And I'm like, just getting this comic. And so I bought a comic and then I was like, okay, that's good. This can be a good thing. I'm like, I can read the comic and then I can come back and say, I really like that comic that I just read. I think I can do this. I heard you're looking for it. I could turn this into a thing. I went back. You know, could we help you? Everything all right? I was just getting the sequel to this comic because the first one was so good. And they're like, God damn it, okay. And then I was like, right, buck up, Maya, we are doing this. Come on, let's go back. I went back and I didn't even say anything this time. I just pretty much just picked up a comic off the shelf and handed it to the guy. He's like, wow, you keep coming back. Have a poster, have a bookmark for free. And they're like, thank you so much. And then I went outside and found Ash and I was like, I fucking blew it. I couldn't do it. And he was like, yeah, that was my fault. I shouldn't have let you go alone.
It's such a relief to hear that you're as ridiculous as I am. That makes me happy.
I'm pretty ridiculous.
That actually does really reassure me.
Does it really?
It kind of does, except I'm 40 and should be over this stuff. I'm 41, actually, and should be over this stuff.
I want to know what creators actually think about this, though, about these, like, really...
They can't say.
I kind of want them to, though.
Yeah, but they can't.
Even if it's anonymous, I'd like for creators to go, like, we were listening and you guys are fucking funny. Just come up, it's fine. Or, you know...
Or maybe, like, oh, these...
We mock people like you. We go out for cigarettes. I just had the most stupid girl. Fuck's sake. You will not believe it. She was a circus. She really was.
Oh, I wish I'd had video of that. Your pantomiming of what the conversation would be like. Brilliant. Excellent.
Should we read some comics, Nick?
Actually, yes. In just a second. First things first. Last week, we've got Abigail and the Snowman, the first issue of Witches and the first issue of Southern Bastards. The Image first versions of those to give away to people who've been sharing the show and stuff.
Yay!
There was a draw, and it's, again, because last week it was David Wynn, who does contribute quite a lot to the show. This isn't a fix. It's just that really not that many people. So this week it's Peter Hammerson. Peter Hammerson has these comics. It's about as weird a mix of comics as you could get, because Southern Bastards is rural noir and it's hardcore. Witches is kind of really atmospheric family horror.
Yeah.
And Abigail and the Snowman is basically a really cute and silly, slightly anarchic comic by Roger Langridge, who is lovely, actually.
Good.
So Peter Hammerson will be getting those sent in the post to him. There isn't a draw this week, but I'm sure we'll do it again. Yeah, listener, you do not need to wait for there to be a draw to tell people about this episode. You should definitely tweet or write in Facebook or write your own blog post on Tumblr or
and
whatever.
Send us hate mail, please. Do.
Yeah.
Oh, like, yeah, that'd be brilliant.
You know you've arrived. Someone told us a very long time ago on the Momcast that you know you've arrived when you get hate mail, and we never have. I mean, I get personal hate mail, but that's not
in
relation
to the podcast. Oh, yeah, I get personal hate mail.
I don't get any hate mail anymore.
You're too fabulous.
Not since I left, like, you know, the sites that teenagers habitually freak. Like, when I was a teenager and on Quizilla, that's...
Shit, what?
Yeah, exactly. It's like, that's a site that will mean nothing to either of you because it was after your time and before yours.
Yes.
But,
so we've got like a good in between now. This is interesting.
Yeah. So, yeah, but I got a lot of hate mail on that because it was a community of emos and I was like, emos suck. Why are you so sad all the time?
Like, that's pretty much it.
I was a teenager, so that's no excuse. I'm really sorry to any emos that I offended in my Quizilla days.
That'd be interesting if there are any listening to this very positive podcast.
And then we might get our first hate mail.
I mean, really, really, Laura, what's the worst thing that's going to happen to them? They're already miserable. Are you going to upset them
more? To be fair as well, it was a subculture that was kind of big a few years ago. So I think they've probably all sort of grown up and regard those days with a sort of, oh, yeah, God, I was a bit...
People don't grow up. That's a myth.
What are you, Peter Pan?
I was born like this.
No, I mean, we get older, but we don't really change or learn. That's a lie.
Yeah, we're all born hypocrites.
Yes. Yeah. Should we talk about this week's comic?
Let's do it.
Laura should go first because she's got Curb Stomp.
I do. I noticed you have Curb Stomp as well.
I have, and I think I might have liked it a bit more than you did.
I think so. I think I was a bit... So I read it as this week's Laura Reads. It's not a bad comic. It's sort of maybe not the best I've read, but it did, it grabbed me with the cover, which is like a lot of feisty looking girls. There's one sticking her tongue out with a baseball bat and one singing, one smoking. Yeah, it's like, it's not especially deep, I wouldn't say, but it hits all the right notes of like cool girl kind of comics. It's got the roller derby, it's got the punk rock singing and the crazy hair and the cigarettes and the piercings and the sort of violence and the drugs. And it's got this kind of, it's hard to say, like the, this decade's version of girl power is what I would describe it as.
Okay.
I
got that vibe. It did sort of look like something I'd pick up.
Yeah, do you want to read it?
Yeah, I'll definitely give it to read it later. I really like the art cover for it. Mm.
The Tula Lote did that.
Yeah, no, she is just, oh my it's God, amazing. It's amazing. She like,
however...
She seemed to have appeared out of nowhere, but I just love her.
However, I'm sort of disappointed. Not disappointed. I didn't like particularly like the art inside, but I did really love the colours by Neil Lalonde did a really good job with it. I really like the sort of neon and the harshness of them inside. It from what I could hear from Laura talking about it earlier, she said it's kind of like a gang war type of thing.
Yeah.
Which really suits it because it goes quite nice and calm and then it really goes into the heavy, like, harsh colours.
It's got sort of every page has a kind of a colour scheme as well. So, like, the second page, a character's introduced called Violet Vault, and that's got like a very, as you'd expect, a purple kind of colour scheme. And then, yeah, you've sort of got like each page pretty much has a colour kind of thing. Mm-hmm. There's some orange pages.
There's definitely
and
theme
green.
Stuff going on there.
Yeah.
That's, yeah. Yeah,
the colouring was great on that.
Yeah.
It's from Boom, who I'm really liking what they're doing at the moment. And
Boom,
it's the first of a four-part series, isn't it?
Mm.
And, I mean, yeah, it's quite interesting for me that we're at a point where we're at a point in our culture where a comic like this can almost feel like it's covering beats that we're quite familiar with already.
Cliche and
it still seems so weird to me.
I'd say tropes rather than cliches, but my complaint with the plot boiled down to is that it hits all the sort of tropes. It's got the warring gangs, it's got the girl gang, it's got the corrupt sort of politician, but it's sort of like sort of had all these things and then just sort of between them it was just and then.
Yeah,
kind of thing. That's what I got from it. I mean,
it's not particularly unusual. The storytelling isn't unusual.
Yeah, it wasn't bad. It just wasn't, I guess, new.
Yeah, and we've got the that whole thing where each person gets their little intro panel and stuff. Everyone's been doing that a little bit since like early Tarantino films and so it's kind of
I actually did get a Tarantino Death Proof vibe from it.
Well, it's interesting you say that.
Yes, yeah. Only because it's not bad, but it's not his best work sort of thing.
I see. I got a bit of Kill Bill vibe from the colours or a bit.
It's written by Ryan Ferrier and art by Devaki Nyogi, and I get what you mean about the art. I think that actually the cover suggests that you're going to get something that's a bit more beautiful, and then the art's very thick lined. So at times it reminds me of Mike Allred and Mike Allred stuff,
yeah.
But it's not quite as tidy. So
I actually, as well, from the cover, I thought it was going to be a bit of a slice of life thing, sort of a girl gang, but not in the sort of, weirdly, the thing I keep coming back to is the Romeo and Juliet style gang, shows which generation.
Or West Side Stories.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's like, I wasn't expecting that sort of gang. I was expecting kind of like just five girls who are really good friends, maybe got into a few fights, but primarily it would be about regular life.
Yeah.
But that's what I got from the cover, and then it's a bit different.
I think what we're all picking up on, personally, and I could be wrong, probably, sometimes I am, mostly I am, I think what we're all picking up on is it's really, really 70s inspired. Like,
okay,
oh yeah,
it's the it reminds me a lot of a film called The Warriors, which is kind of famous but not a lot of people have seen it.
I've not seen that one, but it is on my list.
Yeah, it's about, and again, you'll watch it and it's dated, like, I'm sure it will have dated, but I like it because I watched it, and there's a band called Pop Will Eat Itself, and a lot of the samples they use on some of their most famous songs are from that film. But it's like a 70s film, and it's a really dumb but quite violent 70s film about a city, I'm sure they say which city, it's probably LA, where all of the different gangs, each district has its own gang and each gang is themed, and they all go to one particular place so that the king of the gangs or whatever he is, I might be getting it wrong, it's a long time since I've seen it. The king of the gangs, the emperor, the gang emperor, is sort of saying, look guys, we've all got to, this is all this fighting, it's got to stop. We got to pull together so we can rule this city full of these normal people because we're the gangs and we're amazing. And then I think he gets killed or something and there's chaos. And then it follows this one gang who are called the Warriors, who have to get from where they are across the city, and they end up meeting all of these different gangs who try and kill them.
I haven't seen The Warriors, but it's just hitting me that I have seen an episode of Black Dynamite which parodied the plot of The Warriors.
Yeah, exactly. It's
meta.
It's been heavily homaged and stuff like that as well. And I think that's kind of what they're going for, because it's this thing, isn't there? There's the city, and I don't think they say what the city is, and that's where all the normal people live. And then there are these three boroughs. And there is a gender thing in there. There's like the feminism thing in there, because the feminism thing,
because that
crazy thing, yeah, you girls do.
Because it's very clearly coded that although these boroughs each has their own gang, and they're all, everything's shit in all of them, none of the people from the cities ever go there. And the one gang, the one borough is all drugs, and that's where all the drugs come from. The other borough is all guns, and they're very male. And then the one in the middle is a female
vice.
Gang. Eh?
Is vice.
I guess. Is it vice?
Like prostitution?
Yeah, I guess. Is that what's going on there?
That was just a guess.
Maybe. Well, maybe that's the one thing that's missing from that trio, isn't it? I don't know if it happens in here, but you're probably right.
It just seems like it would be a typical sort of, oh, this is the feminist gang, but they're all prostitutes.
Because they don't seem to do anything except keep things safe for everyone.
Maybe that's their thing. I mean, yeah, they could be a, oh god, fuck, if it's a good gang, I'm not going to buy this. But maybe it's like a good gang thing where they actually are breaking the law to protect the citizens because police don't do anything.
Like vigilante justice.
Yeah, vigilante justice.
I think there's
justice.
An element of that, but they're also way violent.
Okay.
And that's the thing. I think it's, I think that is something that's definitely in there. That the two male gangs, that you're definitely supposed to sympathise with this gang.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel the same way. I like the, there are panels I really like, but then there are panels that bother me in terms of the art. And I think that's because it's a really slickly produced and nicely coloured book, but the art seems really punky and kind of...
It seems like it needs to be more messy.
It's not slick. Well, the rest of the production, if the rest of the production was more messy, then the art would probably fit more. But there are bits of weird perspective and stuff like that that I don't think work quite as well. So, I mean, I don't know. I liked the first issue, but I totally get it. I think it's nice to have books like it on the shelf.
It might be quite interesting to see what they do in four issues, though, because it seems to be setting up quite a big world and problem.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely one that I'm going to keep an eye on.
There's a conspiracy element that comes into it, but the name Curb Stomp refers to an inciting incident where if that was it, and there wasn't all of this other stuff already working against these characters that you meet, then I'd be really into it because I'm like, so there's this balance going on between these different gangs, and then something happens that's way out of control, and then suddenly, but then it introduces a kind of bigger than life villain and stuff like that
The main gang, the Fever, seemed too good.
Yeah.
Like, I think I would have enjoyed it a lot more if there was a bit of complexity, like, the inciting Curb Stomp is basically this guy pulls a gun on her, she manages to overpower him, and then he calls her a bitch, and she loses her temper and curb stomps him, which is sort of fair, but then afterwards she starts freaking out, going, oh my God, I think I killed him. It's like, but you just spent the introductory panels. Hang on, I'll find the quote, because there is... Yeah, here we go. Daisy Chain. She would do anything to keep us alive. She'd give you her last breath of air. She'd happily take your last breath if it got in our way. So it's kind of implied on page 3 that there's one of them who's willing to kill people, and then she gives this guy a bit of a brutal curb stomping and then goes, oh my God, I think I killed him. Oh God, what's wrong with me? Ah, I'm a monster.
Come on, get it together. We also exist in a world where we can talk about a curb stomp and it's like, well, it's not that bad. Get over it.
The first time
I ever saw one was in American History X, and I like gory films and violence and stuff. And I have to admit, I thought, yeah, that's pretty much the worst thing I've ever seen. Laura's down with curb stomp.
I'm not down with it. It just seems like a mixed message that we're fine with killing people, but mashing their face in, that's a bit much.
So curb stomp's interesting. I found the thing with the art, I think, is a mismatch. For me, it was a mismatch between the cover and the production and the actual art, because I think if it was in black and white and stuff, I'd probably be like, oh, there are some really nice panels in this, and it's very bold
and
stuff.
Or if that was in black and white, that'd be quite interesting.
Hmm.
Oh, yeah. Well... But it was 50-50, was it, for you?
I don't know. I think 50-50... I think it was, like, closer to, like, 75-25.
Oh, okay.
Maybe 70-30. I don't know. Like, 50-50 seems like... Like, I realise I probably sound more down on it than I actually am. It's more like it was good, but... The couple of things that don't quite work, I'm like, guys,
it could have been more.
If only they changed that, it would be perfect.
That's how I feel about literally everything ever. Which I think
we're quite positive. I like to think.
Yeah, but I mean,
we've never been this negative.
Well, because
until I got here,
because I see everything as potentially flawed, I can be positive about a lot more stuff. Which is why I end up in arguments about films that I didn't think were that good. I end up defending films that I thought were problematic. We won't talk about it, but we were talking about it earlier on. I end up defending lots of films, and people think, why do you like this film so much? This is the internet. We have to have binary viewpoints. You're an idiot for thinking that there was anything redeemable about that film. And I'm like, literally, my time isn't that important to me. If I spend 2 hours and I see 10 minutes of something that I think is good, that's good. Because I could have spent 2 hours and not seen anything that was good. That happens a lot. So I think it's interesting. I really think that Boom is doing some really unusual books. The only thing about Boom that's a bit weird is it is very difficult to work out. They don't, like Image actually, they don't have a specific identity. They're just trying lots of different things. Yeah. And I guess it's creator-owned. I don't know.
It's coming more and more into like, look at this new weird quirky thing. And you're like, oh, what is this? It happens all the time now, and I keep thinking it's Image, and it's not, it's Boom, and I'm like, oh, that's good for them.
Which is interesting. There was a conversation going on online between Ryan Lindsay and Brandon Graham, and a whole other bunch of people cut in, where Ryan Lindsay there's been some stuff in the news this week about Vertigo and about how it's really struggling as an imprint.
Mm.
And Ryan, obviously, like me, remembers that in the early 90s, when Image was basically a bunch of people doing knockoffs of the stuff they'd done at Marvel and trying to make their own money off it, which is a reasonable thing for them to be doing, but it was very much about this bunch of very specific guys setting up their own club so they could get paid and setting up their own studios and stuff. Vertigo was publishing some really weird stuff, and if you saw something unusual or cool or different from something else you'd seen, it was probably coming out from Vertigo. Mm. And that was the case, like, even to Why the Last Man and stuff like that. So then Image started doing stuff like that. And the first year of or two of Image doing that, every time you saw a new Image book, you were like, wow, that's the sort of thing Vertigo used to put out.
Mm, yeah.
And now it's like...
Sex Criminals, I think. I could see that being a Vertigo title.
Absolutely, yeah. And Saga is... It's not that similar to Why the Last Man, but it's clearly Brian K. Vaughan, and it's like very same, similar themes and stuff like that. And so now you see something like 8 from Dark Horse last week looks like an Image book, but without the Image logo on it. I think that's just because people are starting to realize they can do more interesting things with covers as well.
Mm.
But you're right, it's weird because we expect that stuff to come from Image. They had they've only been doing this stuff for about 2 or 3 years.
Pretty much when I came in.
They've put out a lot.
Jesse's reading comics now. We better put out some quality.
Yeah.
Put the game up.
But I think people should just look. Just look hard at James goes on
go
about
to
this.
Go to your comic book shop and have a good look. Don't just look at Marvel because you're going to fucking hate yourself.
I like Marvel.
I like Marvel too, but I hate myself. So.
I don't like DC so much.
No, because I have to talk about Spider-Gwen. So
oh, right, yeah.
We should not shit on Marvel for now.
Well, shall I talk about my comics now?
Yeah, do it.
Yeah.
Right, I talked about this a little bit last week. I won't go on about it, but 2000 AD, Prog 1919, it's actually the 38th birthday of 2000 AD. I was talking to a colleague at work about this and saying that I actually didn't mind my 40th birthday, but I think I'm really going to feel it when 2000 AD hits its 40th, just because that's a really long time and I've been reading it for a really long time, but on and off. But it happens to be really good at the moment. There is a really good Judge Dredd story, but there's a great strip called Survival Geeks, which is written by Gordon Rennie and Emma Beebe. I think what I said last week is right. This is the second volume of Survival Geeks. And it's about a household of present-day geeks going around their house has started skipping dimensions and they're going from place to place. There's a girl who happened to be in the house when this started happening, and she met one of the guys, thought he was okay, but thought he was fine for a night, but wasn't about to start a relationship with him. She's quite geeky, and they sort of hit it off on that score.
Oh, good, because for a moment I was worried.
It's not Big Bang Theory. She's definitely the best adjusted out of the house, but she's still quite a geek. And normally having geeks in the title would just put me off because I hate that shit. But anyway, but she didn't intend to be stuck in a house with him and his friends for this journey that they're on. But I think the first volume of this, which was only in the last year, I think, if I'm wrong, could someone who knows more about 2000 AD please get back to me? But I think this is the first time there's been a female writer in anger, in like working on something in anger in 2000 AD. There have definitely been female letterers, because one of their most famous letterers is Ellie DeVille. And I'm pretty sure they've had people on editorial staff of that, but I don't think they've had many female creators in it. I'm sure they haven't had female writers in really prominent positions. So it's pretty cool and it's really fun. It's amazing art by Neil Googe. It all looks really pretty. They're stuck in this new world, and I think it's like that sort of dimension hopping thing, and it's quite cool. It's quite quirky. The one thing I said about the first one is there are lots of references that are quite funny to stuff now. It's probably not going to age as well as some 2000 AD stories do, because it is very fixed in 2015 right now. There's a whole thing where someone's pissed off that they didn't ever find out who the new Doctor is going to be. So it's kind of sort of timing. There's a really good Tharg's Three Rilla, which are their three-part stories. That's beautiful and has I don't know if she's homeless, but a begging... the first episode had a Muslim immigrant woman on the tube who's so skint and marginalized that she's having to beg for change on the tube, and she's the central character of this story. So you've got this weird thing where suddenly it's got these two very contemporary female protagonists just thrown into the middle of this comic that doesn't have that very often. Quite often you get female leads in 2000D stories, but they're like badasses. Mm. They're Judge Anderson or Durham Red, or they're not female versions of the male counterparts, but they exist in that same world. They're soldiers or whatever. Mm-hmm. And it's so anyway, so there's that. Suiciders from Vertigo, $3.99, number one, written and drawn by Lee Bermejo, with colour art by, I think it's Matt Hollingsworth. Liebermejo's art's got this really, it's kind of really grounded and realistic, but very stylish and always beautiful. It's like, really looks painterly. It's set in a future LA, I think it's 30 years after a giant earthquake. I'm assuming it's LA. No, it is. It's definitely LA because they call it Angeline or they refer to themselves as Angelines.
Angelinos.
Yes, or something like that. And it's and it kind of centers around they've got rid of all of the undesirables. I don't know who's doing all of their like laundry and stuff, but they've got rid of all of the people who they consider they took the opportunity after this big cataclysm to build a giant wall and stick everyone they didn't like outside.
So to clarify, what's the criteria for the undesirable? Is it like a race thing, sexuality thing?
It's not clear, but we do see two Mexicans trying to... I think they're Mexicans who are being brought in via the sewers at one point. Yeah. So there's this border control...
Right.
There's this border control subtext. I'm not sure what this book's going to be yet. It's really pretty. It's quite well written. But in the center of it, there are the Suiciders who are they're basically gladiators. So it's another dystopian
entertainers
violent sport thing. It's very violent, and we're following one of them in the middle of it. He seems like a jerk, but we don't know very much about him. And then at the same time, there's this. He seems like he's the second main character, but the mule, is that what they're called? No. The person who brings people in across the border seems like he's going to be the other person who's one of the main characters. It's interesting. I don't know. And it's interesting and it's gorgeous. I don't know what it's going to pan out like. And I don't know if it's meant to be an ongoing. I don't know very much, really. Considering I've been doing this for like 6 or 7 years, I'm clearly no better at sorting out a review than I was years ago. But it's interesting, and there's clearly some depth to it. But one thing it does do is it handles the things it does handle with quite a lot of density, and so that means that you get a sense of these two situations that aren't that closely linked,
right?
And the economy and the class system of this place, but you don't quite get a sense of what it's going to be about. I don't think it's always going to be about this gladiatorial thing.
Does it seem quite ambitious at the moment?
Yeah, and I'm not really sure what's going on. And it's one of those things where I am never really comfortable until I've got a sense of what something's going to be. And it doesn't matter how good something is. That's how I felt about Pretty Deadly, and I loved that by the second issue. I was fine, and I knew what was going on. End Odyssey, actually, which I know you're going to talk about in a sec. Spider-Gwen, I think we all read.
I didn't. Oh.
Oh, you didn't.
I did. I don't know why. I was going to review it, and then I was like, no, I did Silk last week. I can't keep doing Spider titles, so.
Well, I don't. I don't know. I don't know. It's a $3.99 book from Marvel. It's not spinning out of the Spider-Verse thing. I want to get into
It's sort of attached
bit.
To yeah. it, though.
It's a character that was introduced in Spider-Verse, and obviously the ones that really caught people's attention in Spider-Verse are getting their own
really fun things. yeah
and there was a one-off story in one of the Edge of Spider-Verse thing, which is by this creative team, wasn't
second
it?
Or third yeah. issue, I believe,
which
third
is the
issue,
one that keeps going back to reprint.
Right, yeah.
Written by Jason Latour with art by Robbie Rodriguez and color art by Rico Renzi.
It's got an amazing cover as well. Like, I want that cover.
Very
it's a
fun.
Massive poster. It's
it had a lot of
gorgeous
covers.
Gorgeous colour on
I
it.
I kind of want to add that.
Oh, right. Sorry. So, to specify, I think it's... Is that the main cover?
That's the original,
The
yeah.
original cover. The one with, like... It looks like buildings, but it also just looks like neon lights and, like, Spider-Gwen.
Seriously, wearing, I kind of just want it as a tattoo.
Wearing what look like really kind of like fluffy it. Blue slippers, but we'll let that slide.
And it's it's one of the few Scotty Young covers that's really... I got the Scotty Young, and it's one of the few that's really resonated with me recently. I really like it.
Oh, very cute. Aww.
Because her outfit's got this really... She's... I mean, it's one of those things where I think... As good as the story was, I think that the costume design broke and was being shared around a lot before people had even read the comic. Mm-hmm. And it went viral because it's one of those designs. It's an amazing, bold character design. It looks great. And so it translates really well into the Scotty Young thing, but it also works really well in all of the different styles that people are doing.
I think people were just... I remember the day the costume design was released and people were so in love with it. And I was like, it's really good costume design, but it has sparked off like this little already like, we are Gwen Stacy, like we are Spider-Gwen. It's really great. I like seeing that.
I just like that it's got pink in it. It's like there was obviously the phase where it's like any girl hero has to have pink because girls... And then there's the kind of backlash to that where it's like trying to shatter that stereotype. And now we've kind of sort of come back to the beginning where it's sort of like, but, you know, there's nothing wrong with wearing pink. That doesn't make you unfeminist.
Yeah.
So I really like that she's a girl who wears pink and she's cool with that.
And she's got blonde hair and it's fine. And people have no problem with that. It's not just girls that really like it because a lot of girls do. But, like, it's, like, generally across the board, everyone just really liked Spider-Gwen.
Even 41-year-old men.
Yes.
Who clearly bought it as well. although it does spin out Spider-Verse, there's very little reference to Spider-Verse. I don't think you have to have read it. The good thing about...
Even if that's the case, it has a little note from editor saying, like, if you do want to read on, you can read this. But this is what's happened so far. I literally gave this to my friend today. As I was reading through the Odyssey, because she looked a bit bored, I was like, read this. I don't think you'll need to read anything else. And she read it. She had no problem understanding how things were, essentially.
Did That's she love it?
She loved it. She Good. Really did. She
That's the way comics
fun.
Used to be, guys. Okay, so this is a universe. This is a universe where the thing about Spider-Verse was it introduced all of these different alternate spider
Yeah,
characters.
What would happen if?
Yeah. And this is a universe where, well, it isn't an alternate. It's kind of an alternate. It's not a parallel, it's an alternate.
Yes.
So it's not just a universe where someone else got bitten by a spider or something like that, the way a lot of these different versions are. This is kind of a completely different thing.
Something happened and caused a different chain of reactions, I think, is in my opinion.
It's also kind of quite a different... It's a much more punky sort of...
Yeah.
Version of the universe as well, though, and I think various versions like Ben Grimm appears as a policeman, and Matt Murdock's a lawyer, but he's clearly not the same. Foggy Nelson, they're not friends.
So and it Peter Parker's dead.
Yeah. So that's the the similarity there is that Gwen Stacy became the Spider Person, Spider Woman, and Peter Parker died instead of Gwen Stacy dying. But it's different in lots of other ways as
well.
Yeah,
it's not. It doesn't just seem like what if you switch the characters around? It's got a different flavor to the universe as well.
Yeah.
Whereas Spider-Man, Amazing Spider-Man, Peter Parker is always sort of grounded. This isn't as much. This seems like a really different future like a different universe that I'm not quite familiar with yet.
Yeah,
that she's sort of got the opposite dynamic to Peter because Peter's sort of not letting Gwen Stacy die, but, you know, the fact that Gwen Stacy died is like Peter's greatest failure as far as he's concerned. And then Gwen has a similar thing because didn't Peter try to become the Lizard because he wanted to be like her? So she sort of has that similar dynamic, but it's interesting.
There's that sense in this universe that a lot of them are trying to be like her because it's cool, because she's cool.
And but that's the kind of the story.
Yeah, the other thing the other thing that's different about it is that everyone knows that there's like this Remember Peter thing. The whole campaign that's anti-Spider-Gwen is anti-Spider-Woman is like has Peter Parker emblazoned on it.
Everywhere. Yeah.
But it's the art's really interesting because it reminds me a little bit of the guy who does Ghost Rider, and I can't remember his name. It's different, but it's really so. It's really clean line. It's really detailed, but it's very cartoony as well, and really energetic and moves an awful lot.
I really like the art in this.
Very dynamic.
It was great.
It?
I also like that she's in a punk band called the Mary Janes.
Like, and there's and they are having like really typical band and girl band bickering and stuff. That's all going on.
How
in there
much
as well.
Is it like Josie and the Pussycats?
I think that might be a vague allusion going
like
on there because the dynamic the demographics of everyone is kind of quite similar to Josie and the Pussycats as well. And that I mean that side of it's really fun. So you get to see Mary Jane in that. In that mm-hmm. way too, the writing's really good. I think it's good. It's very separate from the Marvel universe.
Yeah.
The one thing I really want
really good.
Yeah. The
until
two
Secret Wars when they will combine it.
Well, you see, it's interesting that you say that. The two things I wanted to say. The first thing is that you guys both teased me about the Nova Peter Parker thing and
I
the
didn't
Ms. Marvel
tease you.
Thing. Well, you both said, "Well, what's Marvel for?"
We didn't tease you. Oh, I was making a joke.
Well, it made me feel awful.
I'm so sorry.
Yeah, we apologise for hurting your feelings.
But the thing I was thinking about this was, although it's very apology accepted, although it's it is very much a spider book, and obviously part of I think it's in part of the same editorial guy thing. On the one hand, it's another one of those books. It's about a pretty young character. She's old enough to be living on her own, but like,
yeah.
But like Squirrel Girl, I think
she's
kind
like
of
still in high school. Mm.
Or in the sorry, I'm
no,
just referring
she's
to
she's
the
a lot older,
Spider-Verse.
I think she's
probably around the age, same age as Squirrel Girl.
Okay,
certainly
so
she's
college.
Young, isn't she? She's
yeah,
not
yeah.
old,
but she feels a lot more mature than Spider. Squirrel Girl.
Yeah, but Squirrel Girl hasn't had Peter Parker die on her.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it seems like a much grimmer, slightly. Well, I know.
She
Marvel Universe
deals
gets
with a lot more crime rather than
sometimes.
Another superhero as well.
Yeah. In this first issue. Yeah.
In this first issue.
But so it's another one of those books. It's about a young character. She doesn't have the weight of an awful lot of continuity behind her. The fact that she's a female character is kind of there, but it's kind of tangential to the point I'm making, which is they've got a few of these characters now who are characters that younger people could pick up and maybe
Silk as well,
see themselves in. Silk, yeah, although she's tied into the continuity a lot
yeah,
more, but it's sort
but
of similar.
I don't want to pick up Silk, to be fair.
It's
it
good.
Doesn't look
it's
fun.
It's half decent, actually.
Yeah.
Okay.
The first one was pretty good. And I like the character in Amazing Spider-Man as well. Mm-hmm. I find it kind of interesting. But so there's that. But the other thing is it makes me feel this. And we haven't got time to get into a huge conversation about this, but this makes me, I don't know what Marvel are planning with Secret Wars, and I don't know, we kind of all vaguely know that Miles Morales and the Ultimate Universe are going to be tied into it somehow, and that this is going to be the end of the Ultimate line. And what I think everyone is assuming is that means it's going to be the end of the Ultimate Universe and that Miles Morales is going to be folded into the Marvel Universe somehow.
Right.
I don't like that idea, personally.
I don't like that either.
For a couple of reasons. Sorry, go on, Nora. You were going to say something.
Sorry, no, I was just pretty much saying that Miles Morales, if he gets folded into the main universe, that would have some unfortunate connotations because he can't be referred to as Spider-Man. Because obviously Peter Parker is Spider-Man. And then, so potentially Spider-Boy because he's younger, but then that has some unfortunate things of.
And also, he's going to become a side Spider-Man, essentially.
Yeah,
he's going to
be
he's going to be just. Because
exactly.
Everyone, you know, in the Ultimate Universe, he is the Spider-Man. Like, that's who he is, which is why that book is so
We've
great.
Already had the whole him replacing Peter Parker thing
yeah.
and that. And it's kind of. And those all play into my issues. I don't think it's fair for that character, but also I don't think it's great for the second one is always it's never going to last. You know, the one next door. And the really idealistic people will always say, well, fine, then he can be just get rid of Peter Parker. Why not? And it's like, well, because that's just not going to happen. And actually, Peter Parker's kind of cool as well. The thing that I feel, and I doubt this is what they're going to do, the thing I hope they were going to do with Miles Morales, because it isn't that fucking difficult to do this. Comics, just comics in general, Marvel and DC. There's no reason why he can't stay in the Ultimate Universe. There's absolutely no reason why the Miles Morales comic can't... The Ultimate Spider-Man comic... That's how Ultimate Spider-Man started.
Yeah. Mm.
There's no reason why it can't exist in its own universe, because Spider-Girl struggled doing that a little bit, but that was a long time ago, and it still lasted for a really long time, even though readers weren't as mature as they are now. Mm-hmm. And this book is set in its own universe, and as far as I can tell... Although she's aware of the multiverse, that's not what this book's going to be about.
Yeah, exactly.
So they could, even though everything's going to cross over for Secret Wars and whatever, I don't mind, it could be fun. So Spider-Verse is fun, so it could be fun, it might be rubbish. There's no reason why we can't have lots of books that are in their own continuity, and this makes me feel good, because that's what it does.
Yeah.
I kind of assumed that the whole reason they were talking about ending the Ultimate line was they were going to end all the comics. That's why I assumed they were bringing Miles into the main continuity, because they were like, people like him, we're getting rid of that universe, but we want to have your cake and eat it.
Have they said that Miles is still going to be around, or have they said he's going to be in the 616?
Basically, it's wild speculation from various sources of degrees of reputability.
And it's Marvel, so what they're normally very good at talking and letting fan lunacy take over. So what they could very easily do, what they might very easily have done and said, is this is going to be the end of the Ultimate line.
Mm.
Because this isn't the Spider-Gwen line. They're not calling it the Gwen Stacy universe or anything like that. It's just Spider-Gwen. It's just coming out. So Miles Morales could be Ultimate Spider-Man, and it could carry on in his universe. And I'd like it if they did that, because it'd show that we're all fucking growing up a little bit. And we don't have to, not everything has to be in continuity, and everything is okay, and they can all be their own universes, and we don't have to get upset about it all the time.
Do you need a hug, Nick?
No, I'm fine.
I think we do need to get upset, because that's the fuel that drives us.
Change.
As fans. It's just...
I never
bitching
had...
Bitching and bawling.
I grew up in a world where I was the only person I knew who read comics, and it was... I had a better relationship with them, I think. But anyway, that's besides the point. Oh. Shall we let George talk about Nova Annihilation? I think it's Annihilation. I think that was the name of the event. Anyway, he'll explain it. And then we'll be back, and then we'll talk about Odyssey.
Sounds good.
We'll go home, because we have been talking forever.
Surprise! It's me again, the disembodied voice of George Beedham, author of The Mighty Jambo at notregret.com/Jambo. It's time for another installment of my Annihilation saga. And this is where things get serious. Seriously awesome. So up till now, all the books have been basically a prelude to the two guys who are going to be calling the shots in the cosmic side of the Marvel Universe from this book in 2007 that I'm going to talk about today, way off into the far future of 2010 with the Thanos Imperative. I'm talking about, of course, Dan Abner and Andy Lanning. This time around, they team up with Kev Walker, Rick Magyar, and colorist Brian Reber. I apologise to all those people for pronouncing their names incredibly badly. To bring us Annihilation Nova. Nova's a guy I've talked about before in these contributions. Until this series, he's kind of a C-lister, sometimes member of the New Warriors. Basically, he's one of these casualties of Marvel's ongoing quest to create a new Spider-Man sort of character every couple of years, like Darkhawk and that weird heroic Green Goblin, whatever that was about. Anyway, so we find Richard Rider in the ruins of Xandar after the Annihilation Wave has chewed up the... remainder of the Nova Corps, apart from his little self. So he's haunted by survivor's guilt, as you might expect, and also a mysterious voice, which turns out to be the World Mind. The Xandarian World Mind is best described as the bastard loved child of Zordon from the Power Rangers and the Green Lantern Central Control Battery. So the World Mind supercharges Nova, gives him a new costume and all the power of the entire Nova Corps combined, and then downloads itself into him so that he can get it safely away from the ruins of Xandar and somewhere safe. So Ryder has a few control issues with all that power, so flies off into space and tries to kill a whole bunch of bugs. It doesn't go well. So he crashes back to the surface of Xandar and bumps into Drax, who's insisting he's not the Destroyer, and his little human friend Cammy, who insists that Nova's hat is stupid. So Drax offers to teach Nova discipline and control in exchange for a way off Xandar. So off they pop using a Stargate generated by Nova. That's going to become important in a little while. To Nikos Aristides, where they bump into another forgotten cheesy cosmic hero, and you could argue Spider-Man analogue, Quasar, who is Wendell Vaughn. He controls quantum energy via the quantum bands, hence the name, I guess, I don't know, and has a sweet cape. So he asks Nova to help him evacuate the planet before the annihilation wave hits, and despite Nova being worried of losing control again, he obliges by opening another Stargate. Unfortunately, pissing about with gravimetric power to make these gates draws the attention of Annihilus, who is the big bad of this event, and also likes to collect different energy sources for his cosmic control rod. You can't laugh at that every time. So yeah, he promptly pops around for a look. And obviously a large battle ensues, the results of which I'm not going to spoil for you. So despite the crazy high concept stuff going on here, Kev Walker's art is amazing and crystal clear every step of the way, despite it being batshit insane. So the whole reason that I started doing these contributions for the podcast was to prove to Nick that Cosmic Marvel is amazing and fantastic and well worth a read, and this will always be one of the series that I point people at to prove it, because I mean, come on, it's got cheesy 70s superheroes called Quasar and Nova fighting against marauding giant insects from another dimension. If that doesn't do something for you, then I don't know, I'm just not sure that we can ever really be friends. I'd question that there might be something fundamentally wrong with you as a human being if that doesn't do it. The fact that you've got Abnett and Lanin humanizing this crazy space opera stuff while doing their world building and universe building and yada 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 is just icing on the cake, and it's a testament to these two as a writing duo that they managed to humanize this insanity. Because these aren't the biggest and brightest heroes that the Marvel Universe has to offer. These are just the guys who happen to be in the way when it all hit the fan. These are just the guys who are trying to survive for 10 more minutes so some helpless civilians can get out of the way. And that kind of sums it up for me, the whole superhero thing anyway. Yeah. Wow, I got really passionate about something. That doesn't happen very often. So for those of you playing along at home, that's the end of Annihilation Book 1. I'll be back soon with the start of Book 2, where I'll be catching up with the Silver Surfer. Ta-ra.
Thank you, George. Can't wait for your next thing. I do kind of like Cosmic Marvel now, though, sometimes. Sorry. Should we talk about Odyssey? I haven't read it yet.
It seems like it's the only thing I talk about.
Yeah, we get. I don't think that's how anyone's going to feel.
Okay, well, I'm glad.
We definitely talk about other things than Odyssey.
Matt Fraction, for example.
Things you get upset about.
Matt Fraction.
In comics, there's porn.
Feminism and
Odyssey.
There's a whole
list of things, yeah.
Issue 3.
Yes.
Odyssey by Matt Fraction and art by Christian Ward. Sorry, by Matt Fraction, yeah. I was very excited because this is the issue we get the Cyclops, which for me is one of my favourite bits in the Odyssey. It uses Odysseus's full like Metis and her cunning, which I was very excited to see in this. However, they tricked me. I the whole issue spent like a lot of time building up to Cyclops, which you sort of feel coming. And as soon as they reach land, you're like, oh, this is it, this is it. And they keep like bringing it in, and then they get into the cave and you're like, oh, this is it, this is it. And then the Cyclops appears and everyone immediately starts fighting, which is really cool, because it threw me off, because I initially thought that they were just going to skip a whole bit of a trick that Odysseia was supposed to do, where she tricks Cyclops into sort of eating her last and sort of getting her to fall asleep and making her too drunk to realize that they're sort of planning to kill her, which is what happens in the No Man trick, where like the Cyclops is calling out for others and he Odysseia didn't say her name. Well, Odysseia in this. However, there is a panel where Odysseia jumps up and she's about to like use her sword to stab the Cyclops in the eye. And she's like this horrible, horrible monster with like lots of tits and like
lots
disgusting.
Of tits.
Yeah,
what do you mean like big, ripping, horrible. Big tits.
Yeah, massive. Like
no, hang on. When you say lots of tits, is that just your way of saying she's got very big tits?
There's more than two.
Right, so
lots
actually
of tits,
lots of tits.
But big.
This
as well.
Wasn't some.
You're
some
not
new...
describing a monster to me. I'm quite on board with this.
And she's about to just stab him in the her in the eye, and then like. I'm like, oh, no, no, but this can't happen. This is too soon. They haven't even talked. What is this? What is this? And that's when the Cyclops grabs her and it's fine. And she throws her into the pen with the rest of her crew. And she eats some more people from her crew.
And that's when the eating starts.
And that's when the eating starts. And that's where the issue cuts. And we don't get the No Man trick. How dare you?
So you think that they're teasing you with that a little bit?
They really did, because I genuinely...
Comics really speak directly to you, don't they, Jessie?
They really do. They were Jessie wanted the Cyclops. Yeah. She's not getting the No Man trick, though.
Okay.
But I'm very happy to see that. There's a lot more in the book that I won't spoil for anyone. It talks a little bit more about the gods and sort of what's going on in the universe in terms of men, no men, goddesses, got like that kind of thing. Very interesting. I still don't understand what the rules are.
That's
which
okay.
Is exciting.
I mean, it's mental though, isn't it? That's
yeah,
why.
It's very it's mental very... and the art is so incredible. Especially that I wasn't expecting the cave to be like it was. In the books, it's very, very much described as messy and barbaric, and the oikos of the Cyclops is terrible compared to the ones we've seen so far. This was very clean cut, and the pens with different animals are sort of like laid out, which is quite interesting to see. If this is supposed to be like a futuristic thing, then this is as worse as it gets, apparently. And it's a lot more land and earth based compared to what we've seen so far. When we've been in outer space.
In lots of spacey places.
Yeah, and everything...
A lot of it took place in the body of a god, didn't it? Or
yeah,
something like
exactly.
That.
Yeah. And a lot or of this is more understandable. Like, you understand where they are and where they're walking, and it's a lot more clear.
Normally, I've read the issue when you talk about it. One of the things I like most about Jessie talking about Odyssey, though, is the two things. The first thing is that because you're so familiar with the... story, you have way more trouble with the gender stuff than I do.
Yeah, I do.
Not trouble as in it bothers you.
No,
I mean
no.
Getting he's and she's mixed up. So when you were talking about Cyclops, I had decided and then rejected a stupid joke about Scott Summers. And so every time you talked about she, I didn't know what the hell you were talking about, but you were talking about the Cyclops.
Right. So
that's
in,
my fault.
In this it's a woman. Yeah. I'm when I say he, I'm referring to the Odyssey. It's incredible, and they sort of did a different spin on the No Man trick. And if you have read the Odyssey or you know about the trick, then I don't know if it's spin, but it was a different variation of it that I haven't seen before, which would be quite interesting. It's still very good, and it's still worth the money.
Still worth the money.
Definitely.
That should go on the cover.
Still
of the
book. Worth the money.
It's still worth the money. It's still very good, and it's still worth the money. The other thing is where you talked about them finding land. And that was interesting, because actually that isn't just that you're familiar with the story; it's that the way they have done it, and we've talked about it in previous issues. It's cosmic-y and spacey and spaceships, and yet still feels like a naval. In a lot of ways, still feels like a naval journey.
Yeah.
And the way they've done that, and I think that's a lot of that's down to you know, I'm sure Matt Fraction and Christian Ward talked about that an awful lot, but a lot of that's down to the way Christian Ward grounds things and set lays things out and things like that. So there are scenes in the second issue certainly where the ship looks like a ship coming to land, mm-hmm. and it's very odd and very surreal, and I really like it.
It's quite interesting because in this they sort of crash, and then like some of the panels do like a zoom in,
mm-hmm.
and I just saw it right now, and it says goddess underneath a little like shot to Odysseia, which is quite cool because it gives like this feeling of them being watched, which they sort of are because they the Cyclops is walking around and she's fucking trying to eat them.
Yeah, I mean watched, but I mean like in 2D.
Yeah. But like
Cyclopses
being...
can only see in 2D. It's a wonder they ever catch anything, really.
They're pretty fucking big, though.
And I guess if you see something in the distance...
Also, they're like half... They're not half gods, but they're sort of like abominations that come from Poseidon sticking his dick in weird things.
Being an abomination that comes...
how most life started in the ancient myth.
No, that's Zeus. This is very different. Poseidon does it with weird sea creatures, apparently.
Well, if we all came out of the water, then maybe... Anyway, but just because he's an abomination doesn't mean that his eyes are going to work differently. He can definitely, but I guess if you're a psych, if you just, you see something you want, you head at it and eventually you're going to catch it, whether you know how far away it is or not.
I should point out that the Cyclops is supposed to be barbaric and, yeah. and dumber and more simple and like more animalistic, which is what I'm looking forward to now.
That comes from not really being able to see the distances.
You're really sticking this, aren't you?
It works.
Well, by that token, Nick Fury must lose some of his intelligence.
He turns.
But he didn't always, anyhow. I mean, he must remember what it was like. He must walk into stuff all the time.
I mean, props to him for being a super spy, but with one eye.
Yeah.
Oh, that was a good joke, Jesse.
Super spy with one eye.
Yeah, that was a little poem.
Oh, brilliant. It's the Odyssey. It's making me talk in verse.
Did you want to say anything else about it?
No.
They've already got their cover line. I don't know what else they need.
They're brilliant.
I'm glad you're still enjoying it.
I still am.
Jesse, you can't really afford lots of comics at the moment.
No, not at the moment, making an effort.
You really want that one.
Definitely. If you're going to spend your lunch money on something, it should be Odyssey.
Sorry, I shouldn't have laughed, but the idea that you'd have lunch money is just kind of adorable.
I think she did that on purpose.
Okay. I'm cute like that. I'm 17.
She was waiting for me to say something, so I'm glad you jumped in.
I took the bait.
She's so mean. You're so mean to me.
No, I'm lovely.
Yeah, all right, whatever. Okay, well, I think that's us done. Are you guys... You're going to go play board games. Is that something that's happening?
Yeah, some sort of RPG thing that my husband's doing.
Wow.
She's really excited.
He's basically been, like... He's been sort of planning a bit of it all day and occasionally asking for my input, and I've been sort of going...
And we're, like, 20 minutes
do
late.
Do another
at this
stuff.
Point.
Yeah.
You'll get there. It's fine. Don't worry.
Yeah, it's the street. It's fine.
I live next door.
Yes, pretty much.
On the street.
Where can people find both of you? Laura, your YouTube channel is?
My YouTube channel is Laura Maier, M-A-I-E-R.
M-A-I-A-R.
M-A-I-E-R.
E-R. E-R. And you are on Twitter.
I'm on Twitter, at Laura Does Stuff.
Laura Does Stuff. Jesse?
I think it's I'm Deadpool's Girl on Twitter.
It is.
Good.
It is, yes.
Yeah.
I'm
not
Deadpool's
Twitter
Girl.
Stalking you
on Instagram, it's just Deadpool's Girl. And on Tumblr, it's, once again, I'm Deadpool's Girl.
My innate confusion
She likes Deadpool. Yeah, just in case you didn't get that.
My innate confusion is clearly catching. You have no idea what you are on what. I'm Nick Sight on Twitter, and you can listen to this episode, or you're already listening to this episode, but you can listen to all of our past episodes at wehaveissues.net. You can also find us in your podcatcher of choice. Do rate and review us in your podcatcher of choice.
Favorably.
Do
it.
Okay, so if there's some form of arbitrary number rating system, give us a really high mark and then you can say what you like.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That seems like a fair compromise.
Trick people into listening up to
us. Yes, exactly. Yeah. Or share us on Twitter. We are on Twitter at IssuesPod. There is a page on Facebook. It's We Have Issues. It's mainly there for announcements of...
New episodes.
I do sometimes use the Twitter account just to talk about comics with people in a way that doesn't make it look like I'm always on Twitter in my normal account. But I don't think anyone's fooled, really. And I try and be positive on the podcast account and just normally me.
You are. You're very nice.
Yeah.
People might think we're actually nice. It's great.
It's entirely an act. That's us.
Yay!
Bye-bye, listeners. Bye. Speak to you next week. Bye-bye.
Love you, bye.